This is the Africa Debrief by Atlas News. Hello and welcome to the Africa Debrief by Atlas News, where we take an in-depth look at the region's top stories and analyze and explain them to you. Starting off, we'll delve into the recent decision by the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, to reinstate the death penalty after a 21-year hiatus. This move comes amidst a backdrop of escalating violence in the eastern part of the country, fueled by numerous armed groups and a simmering conflict with the M23 rebels. The DRC's government claims the death penalty will act as a deterrent for crimes like treason, espionage, and membership in armed gangs. They argue the previous ban allowed those accused of such offenses to escape proper punishment. However, the specific target appears to be the multitude of armed groups operating in the volatile eastern provinces, particularly the M23 rebels. The M23 has been a thorn in the DRC's side for over a decade. Recent clashes between the group and the DRC military, supported by the Southern African Development Community, SADC, have seen the M23 gain significant ground. This offensive by the DRC backfired spectacularly, displacing tens of thousands of people and threatening to isolate Goma, a major city. Rwanda's alleged support for the M23 is seen as a key factor in their recent successes. The UN even reported spotting a Rwandan surface-to-air missile system within M23 territory. The reinstatement of the death penalty has been met with fierce criticism. The M23 views it as a way to legalize ethnic cleansing against the region's Tutsi population, a group they claim the government already persecutes. Human rights groups also condemn the move, calling it a regressive step and a violation of the fundamental right to life. Amnesty International expressed their deep concern, stating it shows a disregard for the Congolese people's human rights. The situation in the DRC is complex. While the government seeks to quell violence through stricter punishments, the effectiveness of the death penalty as a deterrent is debatable. Additionally, concerns are valid regarding its potential misuse, especially given the ongoing ethnic tensions. It's crucial to acknowledge both sides of the argument, while also recognizing the dire humanitarian situation caused by the ongoing conflict in the East. Further developments in this story are likely, so stay tuned for future updates as this situation continues to unfold. Next, Niger cuts military ties with the U.S., a shift in the Sahel. In this episode, we'll delve into the recent news of Niger severing military ties with the United States. This decision marks a significant shift in the geopolitical landscape of the Sahel region, an area already grappling with extremism and instability. Let's rewind a bit. In July 2023, a military coup led by General Abdurrahmane Tchiani toppled Niger's democratically elected president. This event strained relations with the U.S., which previously maintained a strong military presence in the country. The U.S. had around 1,100 personnel stationed in Niger, primarily focused on counterterrorism efforts against groups like ISIS Sahel and Boko Haram. Following the coup, the U.S. military presence was scaled back to roughly 648 troops concentrated at Air Base 201 in Agadez City. Here's where things get interesting. Niger's recent announcement cited a lack of diplomatic protocol during a visit by U.S. officials as the reason for ending military cooperation. However, tensions likely stemmed from deeper issues. The U.S. had concerns about Niger's growing ties with Russia, particularly after Russia's Ministry of Defense expressed interest in developing military relations with the country. Additionally, the U.S. may have disapproved of Niger's reported dealings with the Wagner Group, a Russian mercenary outfit known for its presence in various African conflicts. Now, the implications of this move are significant. The U.S. withdrawal from Niger weakens counterterrorism efforts in the Sahel, a region already battling extremism. The future of Air Base 201 and U.S. drone operations are uncertain, potentially hindering intelligence gathering and military action against militant groups. Furthermore, Niger's move signals a shift away from Western influence and potentially towards the Russian sphere. This could embolden extremist groups who might perceive a weakened counter-terrorism capacity. Additionally, the potential involvement of the Wagner Group raises concerns about human rights abuses and further destabilization in the region. It's important to note that the full picture remains unclear. The details of the potential Russia-Niger defense pact haven't been released, and the extent of Wagner Group involvement is still under scrutiny. However, one thing is certain. The U.S. withdrawal marks a turning point for the Sahel, with potential consequences for regional security and the fight against extremism. Our attention now turns to a recent event in South Africa that has reignited tensions between Zulu royalists and the African National Congress, ANC. A commemorative event honoring King Dinuzulu Kachetshwayo in KwaZulu-Natal province turned violent after an alleged act of disrespect towards the Zulu monarchy. Here's what transpired. The event, held at Kwetsesa Sports Field, a significant site for Zulu history, was intended to commemorate the 110th anniversary of King Dinuzulu's passing. During the ceremony, the ANC's KwaZulu-Natal chairperson, Siboniso Duma, reportedly removed the microphone from Reverend Thulasizwe Buthelezi, the traditional Zulu prime minister, right before he was about to introduce King Misuzulu Kazwelithini. Duma's stated reason was that Buthelezi was somehow spoiling the event. This act of removing the microphone sparked outrage among Zulu royalists. It's important to understand that Zulu protocol dictates the prime minister introduces the king. Duma's intervention was seen as a grave disrespect towards the king and Zulu traditions. The simmering tension erupted as Zulu royalists began chanting war cries and then proceeded to attack those wearing ANC shirts with machetes and spears. Thankfully, there were no reported fatalities. The incident raises several key questions. President Cyril Ramaphosa was present at the event, but there has been no official comment from him so far. Duma, on the other hand, has been barred from attending any future royal events. This episode highlights the underlying tensions between the ANC and the Zulu monarchy. The ANC is a political party that has historically championed a more centralized South African government, sometimes seen as conflicting with the autonomy traditionally enjoyed by the Zulu nation. The attack also brings to light the complex issue of protocol and respect within cultural traditions. Here, a seemingly minor breach of protocol ignited a violent reaction. It's important to note that not all ANC members were involved in the disrespect shown, and certainly not all Zulu royalists participated in the violence. However, this event has undoubtedly strained the relationship between the two groups. As the situation unfolds, we'll continue to monitor developments in KwaZulu-Natal and bring you further updates on how this event shapes the ongoing dialogue between the ANC and the Zulu royal family. We now shift our focus to a troubling situation unfolding in Nigeria's Delta State. A recent military deployment and the discovery of mutilated bodies have sparked violence and raised serious questions about the use of force. Here's a breakdown of the events. A contingent of the Nigerian Army's 181 Amphibious Battalion was sent to quell unrest between the Okuama and Okoloba communities. Tragically, an ambush on March 14th resulted in the deaths of 16 soldiers, including the battalion's commanding officer, two majors, a captain, and 12 enlisted personnel. The bodies of some officers and soldiers were later found in a nearby river, bearing signs of mutilation. The discovery of these bodies has fueled tensions in the region. Local media reports indicate that the community of Okuama was burned to the ground on Sunday morning, forcing residents to flee to neighboring Ugeli. While the Nigerian government denies responsibility for the arson attack and has pledged a full investigation, community members suspect the soldiers deployed to patrol the area are responsible. This situation highlights several critical issues. The circumstances surrounding the ambush and the mutilation of the soldiers' bodies remain unclear. A thorough investigation is crucial to shed light on what transpired. Additionally, the burning of Okwama raises serious concerns about the proportionate use of force and potential human rights violations. The unrest underscores the complex challenges Nigeria faces in maintaining peace and security within its borders. Ethnic tensions and resource disputes can easily escalate into violence, and the role of the military in such situations requires careful consideration. We'll continue to monitor developments in Delta State and bring you updates on the investigations and any efforts to restore peace and stability in the region. Our next story takes us to Cape Flats, a region of Cape Town, South Africa, notorious for its high levels of gang violence. A recent surge in murders has cast a spotlight on this ongoing crisis. Here's a look at the situation. Over the past 3 weeks, a staggering 200 people have been killed in the Cape Flats. This surge in violence has sparked outrage from civil society groups who criticize the lack of response from authorities. Action Society SA, a public safety watchdog, points out that even children haven't been spared, with at least 7 minors shot in recent days, 2 fatally. The reality is that many children become innocent bystanders, victims of stray bullets in gang crossfire. Cape Flats has long been considered one of South Africa's most dangerous areas. Crushing poverty, gang proliferation, and the easy access to firearms through established smuggling routes have all contributed to this deadly environment. The sheer number of gangs is staggering. Estimates suggest over 100,000 gang members operate within Cape Town alone, a city of just 4 million people. Rivalries between established gangs like the Americans, the Hard Livings, and the Junky Funky Kids frequently erupt into gun battles on the streets. The situation is further complicated by allegations of police involvement in the gun trade. A 2016 conviction of a high-ranking police officer for smuggling weapons to Cape Town gangs raises serious concerns about police corruption and their ability to effectively combat gang violence. This recent surge in violence highlights the urgent need for a multifaceted approach. While a visible police presence can deter some crime, addressing the root causes of gang violence, poverty, lack of opportunity, is crucial for long-term solutions. Additionally, tackling police corruption through robust investigations and stricter enforcement mechanisms is essential for rebuilding public trust and ensuring effective law enforcement. We'll continue to monitor developments in Cape Flats and keep you updated on any efforts to curb the violence and bring some semblance of peace to this troubled region. Next, we delve into the recent events unfolding in Nigeria's Delta State. Tensions are high following the discovery of mutilated bodies near the Okwama community and subsequent accusations against the military. Let's rewind a bit. On March 14th, tragedy struck when 16 soldiers on a peace mission between the Okwama and Okaloba communities were ambushed and killed. The details surrounding their deaths remain murky, with reports suggesting signs of mutilation on the recovered bodies. This incident sparked outrage, with the Nigerian army claiming the soldiers were murdered by an armed youth gang from Okwama. Major General Onyema Nwachukwu strongly condemned the act, calling it despicable and urging the community to cooperate in identifying the perpetrators. However, the narrative takes a sharp turn with the Okwama community's counterclaims. Locals allege that soldiers from the same battalion arrived on gunboats on March 14th. A traditional peace ceremony supposedly turned violent when soldiers attempted to detain the community's chairman for questioning. Residents claim this sparked gunfire, resulting in the deaths of at least 50 community members. Here's the crux of the issue. There's a significant discrepancy between the two accounts. The community remains silent on their alleged role in the soldiers' deaths, while the military paints them as perpetrators. This lack of transparency fuels distrust and makes independent verification difficult. It's important to acknowledge the historical context. The Niger Delta region has long grappled with tensions between communities and security forces. Grievances over resource control and environmental degradation simmer beneath the surface. This distrust makes it even harder to discern the truth in such volatile situations. So, what does the future hold? These allegations highlight the urgent need for an impartial investigation. Unearthing the truth is crucial, not only for accountability, but also for fostering healing and rebuilding trust between communities and the military. We'll continue to monitor the situation and provide updates as they become available. In the meantime, we encourage critical thinking and seeking information from diverse sources. Now, we delve into the complex situation in Sudan. We'll be focusing on the recent push for renewed peace talks and the dire humanitarian crisis unfolding in the country. As you might know, Sudan has been embroiled in a devastating conflict since April 2023. The war pits the military government, the Sudanese Armed Forces, SAF, against the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF. The roots of the conflict lie in disagreements about power sharing and the integration of the RSF into the regular military, all amidst a fragile transition towards civilian rule. The human cost of this war is staggering. Thousands of lives have been lost, and millions have been displaced from their homes, making Sudan the world's largest internal displacement crisis. But the situation could worsen dramatically. Food shortages and malnutrition threaten to escalate into a full-blown famine, potentially becoming the worst hunger crisis in the world. There's a glimmer of hope, however. The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, Tom Perriello, has expressed optimism that peace talks might resume soon after Ramadan ends in mid-April. These talks, if successful, could be a turning point. The U.S. envisions an inclusive process involving African nations, regional bodies like the East African Bloc IGAD, and Gulf states. Perriello's announcement comes after the Sudanese military government rejected a ceasefire proposal for the duration of Ramadan. This highlights the significant challenges that lie ahead. The U.S. is pushing for several key objectives in these potential talks. First and foremost, of course, is a peace deal that ends the war and the immense suffering it's causing. The U.S. is also concerned about the potential for the conflict to spill over into neighboring regions. Additionally, securing unimpeded humanitarian access to the people of Sudan is a top priority. The U.S. is not alone in pressuring the Sudanese government. The UN Security Council is also considering sanctions against the SAF if they continue to obstruct aid delivery. While the military recently allowed limited aid through Chad and South Sudan, the UN representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, emphasizes the inadequacy of these measures. It's important to note that sanctions have already been imposed by the U.S., EU, and others on individuals and companies linked to both sides of the conflict. Perriello further emphasized the U.S. commitment to holding those responsible for war crimes and atrocities accountable. The path to peace in Sudan is undoubtedly difficult, but the upcoming talks represent a crucial opportunity. We'll be keeping a close eye on developments and bringing you updates as they unfold. In the meantime, stay informed and engaged with this critical issue. Finally, we'll be delving into the UK's contentious plan to deport asylum seekers and migrants to Rwanda. This policy, a central tenet of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's Stop the Boats initiative, has faced significant legal hurdles and ongoing debate. The UK government aims to deter dangerous small boat crossings across the English Channel by establishing Rwanda as a safe country to receive asylum seekers. However, the plan has been met with resistance. The House of Lords, the UK's upper house of parliament, recently voted for a second time to amend the Safety of Rwanda Bill. This parliamentary ping-pong, as it's called, sends the legislation back to the House of Commons for further consideration. The disagreement centers on several key issues. The Lords want stricter adherence to domestic and international law, along with the reinstatement of domestic court oversight. Additionally, they propose that Rwanda only be designated as safe once a specific treaty is implemented. The UK Supreme Court previously struck down the initial plan, questioning Rwanda's ability to safeguard deportees. The new agreement, however, includes provisions to prevent onward deportation from Rwanda. Additionally, the bill seeks to limit legal challenges from outside the UK, such as those from the European Court of Human Rights. The policy's delays and potential failure raise financial concerns. The UK has already invested heavily, and questions linger about recouping these costs if the plan collapses. Rwanda has indicated a willingness to discuss a refund, but the terms remain unclear. Prime Minister Sunak faces mounting pressure. Public opinion polls suggest his Conservative Party is trailing, and the deportation plan's delays cast further doubt on his promise of spring departures. Opponents argue that the plan is inhumane and impractical. Furthermore, recent statistics indicate a rise, not a decrease, in small boat crossings this year compared to 2023. The UK government maintains that the policy is necessary to deter dangerous journeys and save lives. They point to a decrease in crossings in 2023 as evidence of the plan's effectiveness. The discovery of a migrant with stab wounds who crossed the channel in March underscores the perilous nature of these journeys. This incident highlights the human cost associated with these desperate attempts to reach the UK. The situation in the English Channel remains complex and controversial. We'll continue to monitor developments and provide updates on this evolving story. This has been the Africa Debrief by Atlas News.